We know there's a tragedy happening in Israel and the area around it right now, so we want to be super clear about what you're going to be experiencing over the next few weeks. Real Encounters is one of our most popular series, and what you're about to view is season 4. We planned this over a year ago and filmed this back in May. We're excited to show this content because we believe that God chose the ancient land of Israel, carved his story into the land itself, and has something to say to us today through it. Before we get started, I want to take one moment to pray for those who are suffering, which includes Israelis and the innocent Palestinians who seek the peace of Jerusalem, which is what the Bible tells us to do in Psalm 122. So we just agree with the words straight out of the Bible in Psalm 122 that says, "We pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my family and friends, I'll say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity." The land of Israel is a powerful place that still has meaning today.
The story of God told through the land of Israel is written in the pages of Scripture and carved by the very finger of God into the land itself. Join us on a journey to discover your spiritual roots. Uncover the 6 essential elements of identity deep within you, revealed through the life of King David and perfected in the life of Jesus. The 4th season of Real Encounters with God, Downline. All new, on location in Israel. New places, new encounters, real encounters with God.
All right, we're back in Israel. We're actually here. Got the Temple Mount behind us, the Mount of Olives. Actually back in the land for the 4th season of Real Encounters. Yeah. Brian Tomes, senior pastor. Mm-hmm. Got Hannah, teaching pastor. And Suryo, our guide. I think this is season 4 it's with you, right?
Right.
It's our
first
buddy
time
now.
That we're meeting together, loving you all. Enjoying working with you.
And you're loving us all, and we're annoying you. I know
that's constantly.
It's true.
Yes, he's not even disagreeing.
A special sense of humor, right?
It's my love language.
We're back here for a reason, because you've been stewing on this concept that God's been building in you for a long, long time about these 6 essential elements of identity, the primal DNA. So talk about that.
I work with a lot of people, been working with a lot of people for a long time, and had a lot of observations about what makes a life work. Why do some people's lives work and other people don't have a life that works? And as I've looked at it and I've looked in the scriptures at it, it seems like there's 6 things that come up over and over and over and over again. So these are not things that you develop. These are things that you recognize that you have, you can develop your life around.
And this isn't like a Myers-Briggs,
right.
You know, I'm one
right.
type,
Enneagram or something like that.
This is like they kind of build on
right, other. Right. Everyone has all of these. There's 6 of them. Everyone has all of them. And when it really started popping off the page for me was when I started noticing that my favorite person in the Bible, who is Jesus, by the way, he's always the answer. My favorite person is Jesus. But really, my second favorite person in the Bible is King David. Mm-hmm. I just find him fascinating. And I've read his stories more than probably anything else in the scriptures other than the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I realized, gosh, these 6 things that I'm seeing, they come up with him over and over and over again. There's a link between, and of course with Jesus, we'll see it over and over and over again. So there's this strand of DNA, if you will, through the Bible, through the life of David and Jesus that's in us. And if I can help people see that this is who you are, life is going to start to make sense and go forward.
Yes, I'm so excited for this series.
That's good.
Because I've just seen it in you. You get this burn for this idea. So we're starting in a particular spot because there's one of these you got to lock down first before you can get the rest. Which one is that?
That is son or daughter. Yeah. It's your relationship with God. Jesus is told by his Father, "This is my Son in whom I'm well pleased." Mm-hmm. Until you believe that you're loved by God, that you're his son, you're his daughter, that he accepts you as you are. Not that he's not going to push you, not that there aren't going to be significant changes in your life, but until you see that you are loved, who you are right now, you're going to just go down to a rabbit hole of performance, a rabbit hole of judgmentalism. It's the starting place of strength and power to start building your life.
So what do you think is the place to kind of go to talk about that? We see David being a son. Where you want to go to?
Well, that's why we got the expert here.
That's right.
I was thinking. I was thinking that maybe the beginning of his life and Jesus' life.
Right. We're speaking about Bethlehem.
Yeah.
If what we're talking about that Bethlehem, of course, 1,000 years before Jesus, we have David. This is the city of David. Not only Jerusalem is known as the city of David. The Bible also speaks about Bethlehem. He was born there. This is where he grew up. This is where he lived all around. And Jesus, 1,000 years later, is being born at the same place. He's from the same root of David, of course, the same family. So it's linked together, the two places. The one place with the two different characters that you're going to deal with.
Yeah, and when you had this idea, I realized this is just another example. Their lives are popping up the same things over and over again. So I think it's a great idea. We'll go do a deep dive in Bethlehem, which most people only think of it as Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a big deal.
Jesus is known as the son of David. Cyril, what's your last name again?
Bar David.
Whoa. What does that mean?
In Aramaic, Bar it's son and David it's David. So it's the son of David. Of course, I have no idea if I'm anyhow connected to David, but that's the name. My grandfather came 100 years ago. He was one of the first believers here in Israel, Jews who would believe in Jesus. Of course, there were no communities, no congregation, nothing like that.
Yeah.
And by the way, when he came here 100 years ago, he went to Bethlehem. It was under the British mandate, and he went there to a Bible college. So also Bethlehem is part of that
another
story.
Another link in there.
Wow. Yeah.
I love that. I think it's just relating and showing us how there's this downline that exists that we get to see in the life of David, in the life of Jesus, and then in the life of us. We are the sons and daughters.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So we're going to go with you to Yad HaShmonah.
Yep.
And Brian, you're going to start talking about David and Bethlehem.
Modern-day Bethlehem is a city of 25,000 people about 6 miles south of Jerusalem. In biblical times, only several hundred people would have lived there. This small town is highly significant as the birthplace of both Jesus and David.
I'm here in Israel looking to have a real encounter with God as people have throughout history. I'm at a very critical place, one of the most important places in all of Israel or the Holy Land. I'm just outside of Bethlehem. We're looking at these whole hillsides. I tell you what, Bethlehem is kind of the foundation in many ways of Christianity. Bethlehem, as you probably know, is the place where Jesus was born. You can actually go there and see, as the GPS is, exactly where Jesus was born. It's pretty interesting. It also is the place where the lambs were brought up for the temple. The lambs that would go to be sacrificed to the temple were raised in Bethlehem. Kind of fascinating that Jesus is born in Bethlehem because he's going to be the Lamb of God that's going to be sacrificed. And actually, Jesus' great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great- David. We're going to be looking at the links between David and Jesus. They are significant. They are all through the Bible. And I'm not so interested in you just seeing the links between David and Jesus. I'm looking for you to see how they share DNA. They literally share physical DNA, but they also share spiritual DNA, which whether you know it or not, you have as well. There are things that are in you that you may have never identified that they're in you. You may have never known what your genome is. You may not understand all the DNA and your code. None of us do. But I can tell you, inside of your primal code, your primal DNA, there are six things that you just are. And these six things, if you see them, they don't give you like a new checklist of something new to do. These six things help fuel you to do the things that you need to do or that you want to do. It's the six primal core characteristics of who we are. This first one is the most important. Just like Bethlehem is maybe the foundation of all Christianity, this first one is the foundation for your life. All of the other ones all cling on this one. If you don't get this one right, everything else will be bastardized. And I'm using that term bastardized on purpose. This is one of the links that David and Jesus have. There's a thread of being a bastard that goes through both of their lives, or at least being perceived as a bastard, or at least feeling like a bastard. It was here in this area where the prophet Samuel comes to anoint a new king of Israel. Saul has basically disqualified himself, the first king of Israel, and now we have the prophet looking for a new one. God says, go over here to the house of Jesse. The new king is there. And Samuel goes over to the house of Jesse, and he sees all these sons. He sees the biggest one, like, oh, wow, this must be the one. And God says, no, not that one. And then he goes, he sees the next biggest one. He thinks, oh, this must be the one. And God says to him, look. Man looks on the outward appearance, but I look at the heart. In fact, that's America today, right? We look at the outward appearance. We don't look at the heart. We look at what our waist size is. We look at what our skin tone is. We look at what our bicep size is. We might even look like what political party am I wearing on my clothes, or what political party is on my bumper. We want to look at people, make a snap judgment, and think that we understand them. This isn't an American thing. This is a human thing. And God spells it out. He says, don't look at the outside thing. Who cares about body beautiful? That has nothing to do with whether or not I'm pleased with this person and active in this person. So Samuel hears this from God, and he says to Jesse, like, is this it? I kind of heard from God that the next king was here. This is all your sons? And Jesse says, there's one more. Let's read it together. 1 Samuel 16:10. And Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Then Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And he said, well, there remains yet the youngest, but behold, he's keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and get him, for we will not sit down till he comes here. He says, it's the youngest one. The youngest one who's doing the crappiest work of being out in the pasture keeping sheep. Being a shepherd is a dirty, dirty job. Jesus was a shepherd. He was known as the good shepherd, and that was a dirty job because he had to put up with all of our crap, and he actually died on a cross for our sin. Since we were in Bethlehem, we went looking for a herd of sheep. We found a herd of goats. Close enough. Oh, look at this little guy. Come here, little guy. Oh, he's got a bad leg. He's got a leg. You got a leg, it's not operating right. I see him limping on this leg. What's hurting? You got something hurt, buddy? What's wrong? You got something hurting? You need the good shepherd? Jesus says that he's the good shepherd. Sometimes that's what God does. He just kind of takes us, takes care of us. He's the good shepherd. Yeah. You know, these shepherds here, people would try to steal sheep, and actually in ancient times, they would try to steal livestock. Oh, you're okay. They would try to steal livestock. And if you were a hired shepherd, there you go. If you were a hired shepherd, you'd just abandon them and leave them. But Jesus says he's the good shepherd because he lays down his life for us. Doesn't matter what the opposition is, he lays down his life for us. So the kind of trick is keeping all these goats or sheep together, keeping them safe. And the person in charge is the shepherd, that guy over there. You know, it's a pretty intense job he has, taking care of all this livestock, a lot of responsibility, and he's about the same age that David was, doing the kind of work that David would do right here in this same area. The Bible, in many ways, is being played out right before us. It's pretty cool. I'm Brian. Brian.
What is it?
Baro. Good to meet you. Good to meet you. Good, hard-working man. We said, good hardworking man right there. There he is. The universal sign of manhood right there. How old are you?
14.
And how many years have you been doing shepherding?
5 years.
5 years. It's kind of amazing that you are about the same age and probably the same size as David, King David, who was a shepherd boy and then a great king. So we're going to pray and trust that God has great things for you and you're a future king in your own right. It's good. I'm going to do some more shepherding here. Let's see if I can keep them all together. This is basically what being a pastor is, getting all these people who aren't as smart as you to all stay together and go the same direction. Okay, well, just go. Let's all go this way. There you go. Yes, go, go. We're going to stay here. What is that? Are those testicles? Or is that a milk sack? What are those? Milk sack. Okay. All right. I'm going to keep shepherding. Vamanos. Vamanos. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 no. You're too young. You're too young for that. You're too young. Too young. Let's go. Go over there. Go with all your people. Go with all your people. Come on. What if I run at them? If I run at them? I got on the move. That's something. Being a shepherd is messy, messy work. You give the least of the least that work, and that's what David is. He's got this workout where he's shepherding. And he gives him the phrase, he doesn't necessarily say he is the youngest, what Jesse says. It could also be taken in the original language, he is the least. He is the least in Jesse's eyes. When you come over to Israel, you'll see just a bunch of Orthodox Jews with their curls and their hats and their clothing and all that stuff. And if you know what to look for, you might be able to distinguish between which rabbi they align with. There's this phrase, a rabbinical school of thought. This traces all the way back to when Moses brought the Ten Commandments down from Mount Sinai. And when Charlton Heston came to, I mean Moses, when he came down from Mount Sinai, what Jews believe is that he brought the written law, but he also brought the oral law. The oral law were things that God said to Moses that then he passed on to other leaders. And so these different rabbinical schools of thought are different rabbis who was taught by this rabbi, who was taught by this rabbi, by that rabbi, that traces back and they try to trace back and say, we got the real goods from Moses. We heard from him. This is what Moses got from God. One of the rabbinical schools of thought is they have different interpretations of different Bible verses, all that stuff, is that the reason why Jesse was dismissive of David and not really wanting to serve him up to Samuel was that he didn't like his son, that he had doubts whether or not his wife had actually had sex with another man or sex with him to have David, that he actually viewed David as a bastard and he treated him this way. There's some pretty good evidence for this being true. I'm not sure that's true, but there's some interesting evidence for it. David, one of his identities we'll talk about is he is a creator. He's always creating things. And he creates great poetry. Much of it is preserved for us in the book of Psalms. And David says this in the book of Psalms. Psalm 51:5. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. What does he mean when he says, in sin I was conceived? Is he giving us a clue to his background? His mother committed the sin of adultery? I don't know. We'll let different rabbis debate that, different scholars debate that, but here's one thing I know for sure. David felt like a bastard. He felt unwanted. He felt unloved. His dad is bringing everybody else to show the prophet. It's only when the prophet says, are you sure there's nobody else? He goes, okay. there's one more. I believe David has been receiving this kind of brunt from his dad throughout his entire life. He has this in common with Jesus. Again, here in Bethlehem, Jesus was born of a virgin, born of Mary. And of course, the townspeople didn't believe this. And so they believed that Jesus was a bastard. In fact, in the book of John, the Pharisees, the religious elite, are coming down on Jesus and they say to him, well, yeah, at least we know who our father is. They're poking at him like, oh yeah, son of God, Virgin Mary, oh yeah. You're just saying that because you don't know who your father is because you're a bastard. Jesus doesn't like it. He's actually hurt by it. He says, oh, talking about father. I don't know who your father is. You know who your father is? Satan. That's who your freaking father is. Jesus got mad every once in a while. This is one of the times he got mad. This theme of being dismissed, not being welcomed, not feeling enough, having questionable origins. David and Jesus have that in common, and we have that in common. Do you feel you have questionable origins? Maybe not physically when you were born, but do you feel like your education isn't up to snuff with the other people that are around you? Do you feel like you aren't accepted, that people look down on you? Do you feel that way? Do you feel that people are constantly judging you, that you can't measure up their expectations? Do you feel like every day you have to perform, and if you don't perform that day, then you don't justify your existence and you may go hungry? Do you actually feel that you're on the verge of hunger, the verge of starvation? Do you feel that there is a lack of resources to go around and so you gotta fight for them? Do you feel like you've got to constantly compare yourself to somebody else? Am I as in shape as they are? Am I as successful as they am? Am I as beautiful as they are? How am I with my discipline towards them? He's getting ahead of me in this. She's getting ahead of me of that. Do you find yourself having these inner conversations? I know you do. I'm ringing somebody's bell. You might not identify with all of those things, but this is part of the human condition. We feel like orphans. We feel like we're on our own. We're feeling like we've got to claw for everything and no one's going to give us anything. And maybe the government will give us something if we can get a voting block. Maybe we can shame people into giving us something. And then when they don't give us something, what do? We cancel them. Because orphans can't handle somebody else doing something that bothers them. They're very, very fragile creatures. It's like they're like Oliver Twist in the orphanage, just wanting gruel, and everyone's got to have the same. This is actually how socialism, I believe, is on the increase. There are a bunch of orphans that we have a massive problem with somebody else having more than me. So can't we just like level the playing field? Everybody have exactly the same, just like you have in the orphanage? There's a lot of manifestations for this. Again, you may not be able to identify with all of these descriptions, but I know some of them you do because this is the condition of our hearts. We have the orphan mindset. Now, here's the great, great thing. It's unbelievable. That's not in your DNA. It's common to us. It's a thing that's kind of in the air, an evil spirit that's in the air that's taking root in it, but that's not who we are. Who we are is we are a son. We are a daughter. That's who you are. You're a treasured child of the Most High God. You're born and created in the image of God for a purpose, for a plan of God. You have been created and He loves you with His whole heart. He's into you. I have to tell this to myself regularly because I am an orphan. I have an orphan spirit. Not only do I have an orphan spirit, but I was a literal physical orphan. I was born at a very early age and I was adopted. So I was an orphan for a little bit after when I was born to right when I was adopted. I've told some of this story to some folks, so bear with me. I got a new twist at the end to give to you. I was born and I was adopted into a very loving family. Very thankful for my parents, my mom and dad who adopted me. They're great. But I always felt like I was on the outside. I didn't look like them. I didn't act like them. I was taller, my dad was shorter, my dad was a smart Ivy League guy. I was a stupid guy who took 7 years to get a 4-year degree. We just don't have the same sense of humor, none of that stuff. And this caused me to always feel like I didn't fit in. And I always wondered, man, maybe I'd feel better about myself if I just knew my birth father. Maybe that's the hidden key to my DNA. And I actually ended up meeting him. It was a crazy story. I'm not going to go into big depth here right now, but I did see some things in him that I saw in me that I've never seen in another human being. He was very forward thinking, a very straight talker. My parents, not so much so. He just a no BS kind of guy, kind of like me. There's a bunch of things that I had in common with him. And at the same time, there's a bunch of things I had nothing in common with him. On his third marriage, I'm still on my first marriage. Doesn't know where his daughters, my two stepsisters, live. I know where all my kids live. They all live within 15 minutes of me, and they choose to because they actually like me. It's pretty awesome, and I like them a lot. When we got together, it was a real rocking experience. And I came away from that thinking, man, I thought I would have the hidden keys to understanding my identity when I got with this guy. And instead, I have even more confusion now. Who am I? Who am I? It was really a crisis of belief. And the next morning, I was having some time with God. And God said to me in my prayer time, he said, Brian, you're my son. I get you. I understand you. You're my son. Still emotional talking about that day. It was a very important, special time for me. Now, that was 4-ish years or so ago, and I've tried to stay in touch with my birth father. I've sent him texts and stuff, and the last 4 texts I've sent him, I have gotten no response. I don't think he's dead, because he was really healthy when I saw him, and if he was dead, his number would be out of order, or somebody else would be texting me saying, hey, this isn't whoever's number you think it is. And so 4 times in a row, I've been blanked. And my orphan heart wants to say to me, you're not important. You're not even loved by your own flesh of blood. You're not worthy of some guy returning a text. My flesh feels that way, but then I have to realize, oh, no, that's not true. That's not true. Well, it might be true. He might not like me. That might be true. But what's true is, I'm a treasured son of the Most High God, and you're a treasured daughter of the Most High God. In the Bible, it talks about us being sons of God. It really doesn't talk about us being daughters of God, though if you're a woman, you are a daughter of God. What the Bible's trying to say in that ancient vernacular is the only people who would get an inheritance were sons. And so by calling us sons of God, it's saying that men and women all get an inheritance from a loved father. All of us are sons of God. All of us are daughters of God. And when God comes to you, he says to you what he said to Jesus the first time we have recorded in the Bible, what God said to Jesus was this, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. God only spoke to Jesus 3 times in the Bible. 3, that's it. At least that's the only time it's recorded. 3. 2 of the 3 were total repeats, exact same. This is my son in whom I'm well pleased. Let me tell you something. If Jesus needed to hear for that 2 times, I need to hear that twice a day, 3 times a day. You need to hear that right now. You need to understand right now who you actually are. Not who the world says you are, not who you think you are, but who you are. And that is a son, that is a daughter in whom he's well pleased, whom he loves. When you believe this about yourself, everything else in your life changes. Before we get into these other identities that are in your primal DNA, you got to recognize if you're not solid on this one, that you are a son, love the Most High God, if you don't get that one really clearly, the rest of these are going to be bastardized. You're not going to operate properly. You're going to abuse people. You're going to twist things. Everything starts with saying, hey, I'm good. I'm good because God's good with me and he's pleased. To understand why being in Israel matters to our identity as sons and daughters, Kyle and Hannah are about to go deep on what God says to us through the land itself. Welcome to Yad HaShmona.
This is my hometown, okay?
Yeah.
Finally, awesome. We're here.
Finally.
Yeah, yeah. It's a mix between Jewish people who believe in Jesus and non-Jews who believe in Jesus that live here all together. So that's the uniqueness of this community. So I myself, I was born in Tel Aviv, but I moved here when I was 4.
Mm-hmm. So who all lives here?
My parents live here. They moved here when I was a child, of course. I grew up, I got married, so myself and my wife, my brothers and some of my sisters that are married, they also live here. My children live here. My brothers and sister children live here too. So it's like 3 generations now that are here. And it's I have here cousins, and actually it's a big family that are living, you know, all together.
Can we see more of the property,
of course,
the hotel?
Let's go. And this is also where Jesus was when he was walking at the first day of the week to the village of Emmaus. It's the same valley down below. This is where he was heading to.
Wow.
So he was just walking this hill that you see over here. There is a Roman road that goes from Jerusalem, crosses that hill, and go down there. This is
the road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is where Jesus with the 2 followers, I would call them disciples, was walking all the way down to that village on that side.
The road to Emmaus.
Emmaus.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
So he just crossed that hill over here.
Who's just somebody that has poured into you? We've been talking a lot about son, we've been talking a lot about daughter. Obviously, you run this place, and this generational, was that your parent?
I would say I had the privilege, really, my uncle Arye, that some of you met him before, and he was guiding Brian and others.
Yeah.
All his life, his heart is about the Bible, of course, and the land of Israel. Through, you know, you walk through the land of Israel with the Bible so you understand better. Mm. And for me to grow up as a child, he would take us, you know, to 3 days in the desert. We will have to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We had to walk for several hours quietly, like in the military, and then we would open Bibles and we would read. And so all this mentality of walking through the land and learning, yeah, and he has all those insights about, yeah, you know, the scriptures and the land, I would say big part of what I share is actually what I learned from him.
So Arye sounds awesome. And I think he's around for you. So let's get to meet him, yes, and hang out with him and chat with him.
Let's do that.
All right.
Arye is not only a native Hebrew speaker and theologian who's dedicated his life to studying and teaching the Bible in its original language, but he spent his entire life, more than 70 years, walking and living in the land of Israel, studying its topography in intimate detail. His insights gathered over those years reveal something incredible, that the story of God has not only been written down with words in the pages of Scripture, but meticulously carved by the very finger of God into the land itself. To see it, we have to start by orienting ourselves. To be oriented means to understand what direction you are facing. In the Western world, north is at the top of the map. But in the ancient Middle Eastern world, east was at the top of the map.
Look how important it is to be oriented. And what does that mean? The Bible is oriented. You see, this is the Dead Sea. If now we were in biblical times, I will hold the map this way. Hmm. Not this way, pointing to the north.
In ancient Hebrew culture, going east meant physically going forward or leaving home, and spiritually, it meant going far from God. When God delivered Israel from Egypt, where they were enslaved for 400 years, he took them on a long 40-year journey through the desert until, beginning at Mount Nebo, he led them west towards the Promised Land. Going west meant going back into a relationship with God. God used the direction they walked into freedom to speak deeply to them about what it meant to be far from him and what it meant to return to him. God used the physical land to teach them a deep spiritual truth.
You call it Dead Sea, I'm right?
Yeah.
In English, you're the only one, only language that call it Dead Sea, no other language call it Dead Sea. No, not the Bible. We call it the Salt Sea, but more than this, the forward sea. Why? Because the Bible is oriented. So people standing with their face forward. And if I'm standing like this, my face is forward, who is forward than me? The forward sea. So if we're standing like this, facing east, yeah, oriented, this is called the forward sea. This is called the backward sea, because it's behind us.
This is how the Bible says. When you read it in Hebrew language, yeah. It calls the what you call the Dead Sea, it's called the front, and the Mediterranean is called the Back Sea. This is the way the Bible speaks yeah. about
wow.
those seas.
Wow.
Yeah. Our translation just takes that out.
Yeah.
Totally. Not only this, another 50 others. I really mean it. I really mean it.
This is not the only time God used the physical landscape of Israel to teach us how to live in relationship with Him. Throughout the Bible, time and time again, God uses the very ground they walk on and the way He leads His people through it to show us who He is and who He has created us to be.
I can give you so many other examples of how you totally misunderstanding what the Bible wants to say if you don't understand this principle of orientation, yeah. that the Bible is oriented.
This is where it gets mind-blowing. If you trace the major events and places in the nation of Israel's history, you'll find that they all fall on an exact line on the map. A line that starts in the east and moves steadily to the west, each new event and place marking progress on a clear return of God's people to Him, going west physically to the land He promised them and going back spiritually to follow Him. The more west they went, the closer they got to God in returning to God's perfect, holy design for life with Him. More west, more holy.
Now, what is the meaning? They go only one direction, west, 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 west. So, from this, actually, the idea of more west, more holy, actually, it came from this. You see, this idea. Why? Why they had to start with Mount Nebo? What is Mount Nebo represents? You see, what it is? Wow, it is so much. And then from Mount Nebo, you know, they went down, they made the Midianites, that all these kind of terrible things that happened with fornication and so, and then they had to cross the Jordan. Why? What is the Jordan in this picture? What is? Jesus said, I'm the living water that comes from the seed of the Father. And look how the land of Israel represented in front of your eyes, all the story of salvation. You can reach with Moses very high, Mount Nebo very high. By the way, the same height of Jerusalem. But it's not enough to conquer the land. You have to die for yourself. What Jesus said, deny yourself, take the cross and follow. And look how he did it, the lowest place in the world. Imagine, the lowest point, the millions or billions of points, right?
Yeah.
The lowest point in the world is this point. Where they had to cross the Jordan. Mm. It happened mistakenly. And whom they met, they met the living water that came from the throne of God and called the Jordan River with all the meaning of this, right? And here, after being the living water for the nation of Israel, by the way, till a few years ago, this was the living water. We were drinking all water that was pumped from Sea of Galilee.
Wow.
But this is clear. And in this point, we meet. In this point, just before reaching the Dead Sea, the crossing. Actually, here you can see the red. This is modern road, Shunet Nimrin, and so on. This is where they crossed. Joshua, Elijah and Elisha, Jesus and the disciples. I mean, if you look, all the pilgrim tank from Galilee had to cross here and to climb all the way. So what God did here? This is the lowest place in the world. We agree, right?
Yes.
Minus 1,200. But look what you have. Jerusalem, comparing to this, the highest place. You understand the point? So our life starts from dying, baptizing, is dying to ourselves, and from that moment we have only one direction. What is the direction? To go up, 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 up. Hmm. You see the idea, you almost see in the land is almost a picture that you can see in front of your eyes. And that's why it's so important to come to this land. Look, we call it, you know, politically to whom it belongs. Always I mention Joel chapter 3, what God says, the land is mine. Not Palestinians, not Jewish, not Israelis, is mine. And this is something that we feel here. It belongs to God, this land, because he created it, like he said, Psalm, like in his fingers. He created to represent all these spiritual things, but in front of your eyes.
So good.
They are. You see? And this is why the land became so, so strong point for those who hate God to take it from his control. You see?
It's almost like the land itself is speaking.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You said it the best way. The land speaks. And I count 12 stations.
Okay.
In this more west, more holy. Now you come to the temple with all the 7 more holies. And if you look what you have west of the temple, this is to me amazing. You see Golgotha, the cross, exactly. Mm. You know, there is a big dome with a cross, exactly in the middle. You see, on the middle of this axis, Golgotha. And that's very clear. The cross is more holy than, you see, than the Holy of Holies. And when you go again a little bit more, again, the tomb. Which tomb? Empty tomb. This is the most holy, in a way. That's what we are following him. He resurrected. He's not there anymore. And that's why when you take the people to the, you know, Golgotha nowadays, they still mourn. They still mourn on him. No, no, he's not there. And that's why it's so important to go to the Garden tomb. You understand? On this principle, right? More ways. And of course, to me, the idea that Jesus raised from the tomb, which is the last point here, and walked westward, first time, westward, wrote to Emmaus. Why it is so important? For me, when we came first here to this place, okay, 45 years ago, yeah, you was baby, right? You was
4 years old.
4 years old, right, right, right. To me, I already saw these things. I already understood these things. I said, look, even the hill here, Kiryat Yearim, where the Ark of Covenant was, 20 years when David brought it. So Jesus walked this road to Emmaus, westward. So what is there? All the world. Messiah that rose from the tomb is not any more Messiah of the Jewish people anymore. Because before he said, don't go to the road of Samaritan, go only to the lost sheep of Israel. Not anymore. You understand? Jerusalem is in the back, and he goes to the world. And show me another place better than the other Shmona that you can look now.
Right.
Look
at the line. The world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the line of Mediterranean. The world is there. So I believe God planned it. Not only this, I will tell you something that only people that will come to Israel will see it. Our last home of Yad Shmona is a stone throwing from the road to Emmaus. I believe, maybe it's my imagination, that when Jesus walked here with Cleophas and his friend, he stopped a moment, he took a stone, pew, it fell around the house of Liat and said, here will come the first Jewish messianic village in this country.
Wow.
You see, I believe everything was planned.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
That was the short version.
Whoa.
That was the short version. I want to hear your reaction.
Okay. Let me try to get some cohesive thoughts. I think that most people genuinely believe they are here by random chance, that God doesn't actually have any sort of order. He just wants to be obeyed and worshipped, and that makes him this, like, kind of ridiculous, self-absorbed God. That's a lot of the world, I think, kind of believes that, and so they shun Christianity, they shun this idea that Jesus is Messiah. And then even people that are following Jesus, I think, sometimes struggle to believe that he created them with very specific things in mind. He has a perfect plan, and that he has something for them that's not an afterthought, but has been thought about for many, many years. And so listening to that story, you almost get like a little emotional that God cares so much about us, even back in Ohio or Kentucky or wherever we're from, watching this right now, he cares so much about us that he didn't just lay out this land, but that he kept walking west so he could lay out our land. Mm-hmm. So that this identity, this idea of being a son, of being a daughter of God, is not a concept that's just out there, but something that is physically represented. And frankly, the very stones that we get to the pleasure to sit on right now. And that he has a plan for us that is as specific as this map. That he has a way for us that is as kind and generous and thoughtful, and that we get to be a part of this bigger story, right, of him really just showing us his love and the way that he writes it is his steadfast love, right? It endures. And so anyway, mind blown. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for the short version. I can't believe that's the short version. And I just pray that folks will, after seeing something so specific, believe that he has something so specific for them, and that because of Jesus, they are grafted into this story, grafted into the family of God, and that the identity as a son, daughter, as an heir, is not a word that we chose to make them feel good. That when he's calling us that, he's not just like, he means it, yeah. And he meant it even from all the way east to all the way west. So praise God.
Amen.
Yeah, amen.
I hope you heard it today. This is a story written about you and for you by the God who created you. No matter who you are, what you currently believe, there's an invitation on the table of God inside his house with your name on it. And there's a seat at that table, and no one's allowed to sit in it until you're ready to take your place. So you are his son, you are his daughter.